Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I'm talking with Owen Edgerton, author of the satirical short story collection, How Best to Avoid Dying. So before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about Owen. Owen has lived in Austin, Texas since 1991, and for the most part, he's made his living making people laugh. For years, he was the artistic director of Austin's National Comedy Theater and Comedy Sports Troupe. In 2000, he co-founded the Sinus Show at the Alamo Draft House, the most popular comedy show in Austin history. Most recently, he directed and performed in Plays Well with Others at the Zach Scott Theater in Austin. His first novel, Marshall Hollinser is Driving, has the film rights optioned by an Austin director-producer, Jeffrey Travis, and Burning Myth Productions. Owen has penned scripts for film, television, and stage, and he is a commentator for NPR-affiliated stations. Owen is a vocal activist. He founded Austin's The Right to Marry Group, which works for equal marriage rights for all citizens. So I'm just so happy to have Owen on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Owen.
Thank you, Anita. Thank you for having me.
Yes, this is great. So I'm so fascinated by your book, How Best to Avoid Dying. It is a unique collection. You know, it's being described as bizarre, disturbing, yet brilliant at the same time. So I'd love for you to describe this book for listeners today. And then, you know, tell us what your intention was for writing these stories.
A brief description would just be, a collection of short stories, all of them on the theme of death. And they definitely do often sort of venture into the bizarre, occasionally the absurd.
Mm-hmm.
I hopefully have a lot of humor in them as well.
Sure.
I started writing them a few years ago, and I didn't realize it at the time. I was just writing stories, and I didn't realize that I was concentrating on a theme, but as I looked back, I realized that I kept on visiting the idea of death. In some ways, I think I was looking for a loophole.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was sort of trying to find a way out. So all my characters were trying to find ways out, and I kept looking at death from different angles and different directions. And eventually, even some of my characters even found loopholes, and even that wasn't kind of a very satisfying answer. So in a way, what it was a period of time for me of wrestling and dancing and maybe a little necking with death. And the stories are the outcome of that.
That's great. So how many stories are actually in this collection?
18 stories.
Okay.
And some of them are longer short stories, and some of them are no more than a paragraph or a page.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a variety in that way. I'm a big believer in a good album, a collection of short stories should have a lot of variety and rhythm and a musical feel to it.
That's a great, great way of putting it. It reads that way. So, you know, that's very, very interesting. How long have you been writing these stories? What was the time frame that you were kind of, you know, thinking about these issues?
Yeah, I think, let's see. It was probably over about a 3-year period or so. I started writing these stories mainly around my 30th birthday. Shortly after I turned 30, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which is juvenile diabetes, and that's sort of late in the game to get that. It's kind of a surprise. But all of a sudden, my life changed quite a bit. I had to give myself several shots a day, and I had to go to the hospital. And it was kind of a scary time, and I think in a lot of ways that helped inspire these stories, this sort of examination, and not that I wasn't aware that I was going to die beforehand, but this was a pretty sharp reminder that my body was not built to last. And already, if my body didn't have the benefit of modern science, it wasn't going to be working anymore. It was done. It needed these shots every, you know, few hours to keep going. So I think that's the beginning, was the beginning of this story thread.
That's fascinating. I think, you know, we all have these little wake-up calls, you know, in life. So it sounds like that's what that was for you.
Yes, yeah, sure was.
Interesting. So, you know, the fear of death really is probably the base level fear that we have as humans. I'd love for you to maybe talk about, you know, that fear being that strong in us and you weaving that into, you know, the satirical dark comedy that you have in your book.
Yeah, we have a really strange relationship with death. Usually, actually, fear is maybe not the worst part of it. I think actually a sort of, not even apathy, our worst relationship is when we ignore death. And I think that is the place we usually go to. We ignore death. We use phrases like, well, if I should ever die. Vonnegut filled his last book with that phrase, you know, as a man in his 80s filled the book with, if I should ever die, God forbid, and, you know, with his tongue firmly in his cheek. Of course, we are all going to die. And when we ignore it, when we pretend that that's not part of our life, I believe we live shallower lives, that we're not really in touch with what it means to be alive, to be human, because we spend so much time hiding from this key element of being alive. And what we end up doing is watching television, and we end up drinking beer, and we end up being more interested in, you know, the next baseball game than we are in really being alive. So fear sometimes comes into it, but worse than that is blindness.
That's interesting. So would you tell us a few, maybe a little overview of a few of the stories in your book and how the characters in your stories are greeting death?
Sure. Let's see. There's quite a few different directions. So the first story in the collection is called Spelling.
Yes, this is a big one. I've heard about this one.
Yeah, people reacted to it well. It's short. It's only a few pages. But in it, I was hoping to introduce the themes of the book. And so it's a spelling bee, and it's told from the point of view of one of the best spellers in the world, this 9-year-old girl who can really spell. And it's in the future, and in this particular future, we decide international problems through, instead of wars, spelling bees.
Uh-huh.
But if you get the word wrong, a pit opens up beneath you, and you fall to your death, and there's flesh-eating pigs underneath you. It's a life or death spelling bee. And in it, some of the characters, in different ways, they're standing over this pit, knowing that if they get one word wrong, and eventually everybody but one person in a spelling bee gets a word wrong. So eventually all of them but one will fall into that pit. And they react in different ways. Some of them have ideas of like, well, whatever happens, I'm going to look good. I'm going to have the right clothes on. It's going to be fine. Others of them concentrate on being remembered. Well, you know what? Even if I get the word wrong, I'm going to do a funny little bow and a wink to the audience so they'll remember me. And even those, you know, these are ways we kind of try and deal with imminent death. You know, I'll be remembered, or I'll look good, or there's no way I'm going out. I'm going to survive. In the end of that story, our narrator is hanging by her pants. They're ripping it over the pit, and she sees below her these pigs, and she can see the audience gawking at her. And her last phrase is I wish this moment would last forever. And that seems to be one of the weird things about being human. Life, especially when we're really honest and facing death, can be pretty frightening and horrific and strange and incomprehensible, and really, it's easy for us to flirt with the idea of meaninglessness, and yet, with all that, oh man, I sure hope it keeps going.
Yes, isn't it interesting? Strange creatures we are.
Yes. So then other characters have other reactions. The last character, Lish, who's possibly the hero of the stories,
mm-hmm.
she sort of takes on her own death. She's going to sort of embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something to that. Not necessarily, I'm not in any way encouraging suicide or anything like that.
Of course not.
The idea that we walk with death from the moment we're born. He's right beside us the whole time. It makes sense to make friends with the guy before we're surprised by him when he taps us on the shoulder and says, hey, hi, how you doing?
Yeah.
I've been here. One of the ones that maybe, of all the characters, that's most interesting has maybe been the Lazarus story, too.
Yes. I really want you to talk a little bit towards this and why you decided to take on a story, an interpretation of the famous biblical story of Lazarus.
I think as I was sort of exploring death in a bunch of different ways and having a lot of fun with it, it occurred to me that if I'm looking for a loophole, why don't I go ahead and choose someone who has already found a loophole? Like, well, Lazarus was dead for 4 days, and then Jesus, you know, called him out and said, well, what's going through his head? What was that like? What was that like to be dead for 4 days and then alive? It turned out, as I sort of gave myself to the story and explored it, that Lazarus is not at all pleased about being alive again. In the story, because he has died, he can no longer die. So the story is told from the point of view of Lazarus, modern day, living in an apartment in New York City,
mm-hmm.
and desperately wanting to die.
Okay.
So, funny enough, when I finally found a loophole, look, I got one, the character was telling me that it's much better to be dead.
That's hilarious. So I know that you've actually studied quite a bit about various cultures' views of death. Are there any that particularly stand out for you as intriguing?
Well, you know, they're all pretty fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I think the way we think about death, it seems that if you just describe life as a long hallway and at the end there's just this doorway, and that shadow of that doorway just fills up the entire hallway. It is amazing how many different ideas and thoughts we've had about not just the doorway, what's on the other side. But in some ways, what I concentrate most on this particular collection is the door. Because the other side, we just don't know. I don't think we're meant to know.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a God who's got a heaven with harps, he has also designed the situation so that even if we've got books telling us and we've got people dying who come back and say, oh, I was dead for 2 minutes and there was a light at the end of the tunnel, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. There's this mystery to it. And that mystery, I think, is the most important thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think so often in our culture, perhaps ever since the Enlightenment, In the Western world, we've been driven to solve mysteries. When the most beautiful things about our world are the mysteries that cannot be solved
mm-hmm.
and shouldn't be solved. So I find sometimes with the understanding of death in different cultures, I think the most beautiful ones are the myths that allow for that. The myths that allow for a strange appreciation of death and an understanding that it's moving on to this different mystery
mm-hmm.
that we just don't know about, even if that mystery is non-existence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there's a theme here of faith that you're really addressing as well, and how interesting to blend fiction and humor to address the issue of faith. Can you talk a little to that?
Sure. Faith, of course, when you talk about death, often comes into it. And for me as a writer, it, it seems to be an issue that I return to again and again of ideas of faith. And whether it's in a sort of obvious way, like retelling or talking about a biblical character like Lazarus, or whether it's in a couple of layers down within a story, faith is there. But I think, like faith, like death, are issues that we get so serious about.
Yes.
You know, there's certain topics you're just not meant to talk about. Not meant to talk about religion. Don't really talk about death. Don't do about politics. And we end up having conversations about, you know, what was your favorite episode of Friends?
Mm-hmm.
And we're missing out. We're missing out on some of the depth that we should be experiencing. So I think that humor often allows for us to go deeper into issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we laugh, we open our mouths and things get in.
Interesting.
It just sort of happens that way. There's a writer, and I can't remember who the theorist and who she is, but she one of the things she talks about in humor, when you're watching a film that has humor in it and you laugh out loud, you're no longer an anonymous member of an audience. You are a vocal. You've announced yourself. You've had a physical reaction, and that physical reaction, you know, if your body laughs, that's going to affect your heart in a really cool way. So if a book or a story that I'm writing can make you laugh, well, that's cool. I think that's a sweet piece of bread to put
yes,
the right kind
is.
Of marmalade on.
Yeah, it is amazing, most definitely. So I know that you are extremely active in the local Austin art community, the creative community in the city. So how has this area influenced your work? And in particular, because I know that you are very diverse in what you do, but particularly in your writing.
You know, Austin, I'm in love with Austin. I think it's just a great town, and the longer I stay here, the more I fall in love with it.
Mm.
And one of I do feel, without a doubt, that these stories, I sometimes think with a story, with a book, a professor of mine, Dagoberto Gil, great writer, he'd said that you can sometimes smell where the book was written on the pages.
Oh, that's fascinating.
That the writing soaks up the environment in which it was written. And so some books, you know, you find someone who wrote great books, but then they got a little too wealthy, and they got a nice little, you know, office in an ivory tower, and suddenly their books start to smell like a stale office in an ivory tower.
Oh, God.
Well, I think I've been really lucky to write most of my writing in the coffee shops in Austin, and I hope that the pages soak up the flavor of Austin, which is a town that encourages creativity. It allows, because rent is not too expensive yet.
Yeah.
it allows for folks to have part-time jobs, but have what they're doing being in a band or painting paintings or composing music or making films or acting in plays. It's a great town because in other towns you go to and you ask, well, what do you do? And, well, I work in this office, or I do this, I do that. My real desire, you know, I'd love to be a guitarist, but that's not what I do. But in Austin, you ask, what do you do? And you go, oh, I play guitar. Every now and then I have to work at Kinko's, but I play guitar.
Yeah, you know? Right.
So we're a town that loves artistic expression. We love exploring creativity. We love entertaining each other.
Mm.
And in the right kind of way. There's not a lot of people making huge amounts of money from the films or the books or the music that they create here in Austin. But that's even better because in some ways, because they're doing it with a sense of gift giving. They are giving to people, and they've got an eye to entertain and to inspire. And that this town just supports that,
mm-hmm.
and encourages it.
It is a wonderful city. Is that why you moved to Austin in 91?
A little bit. I moved here for school. But part of the reason I chose to go to the University of Texas was I knew that Austin had an art-loving community, and I knew that it had a comedy scene.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I knew I was going to be doing comedy when I got here. So.
Mm-hmm. So besides Austin as, you know, a creative inspiration, what else has inspired, or who else has inspired your creativity? I know you're a big music fan.
Yeah, I'm a big music fan. So, yeah, a lot of the musicians that inspired me, one of them would be Charles Mingus, the jazz musician and composer. And I've got a story that is incredibly inspired by him. I stole the title of one of his songs, Tonight at Noon.
Mm-hmm.
The story, and he's great, and his not only plan, his sort of planned out structure of music as a structure in where spontaneity and improvisation can flourish is amazing.
Yeah.
I love that. I also love some of the local musicians here, like the Orange Mothers. I think Ethan Azarian is a great poet. He's like William Blake with a little guitar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's great.
So there's a lot of great music here in town that thrills me. And then there's, as far as other artists that really inspire me, I think the writings of George Saunders.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's one of our best writers alive today. He's great. I'm a huge fan of Kurt Vonnegut.
Oh, yeah.
And Tom Robbins as well. Influenced me a lot as well.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the folks that really get me. And then just a lot of the folks here in Austin, other writers. There's some great writers here in Austin, you know, Michael Yang and Mark Barr, just to name a few, who are kind of up and coming, whose style is great, and they really inspire me, and hopefully we inspire each other.
I'm sure. So I know that you have written and performed comedy, but I've also read or heard somewhere that you prefer writing fiction. Is that true?
Yeah. Funny enough, I've done comedy to pay the bills,
mm-hmm.
so I can write,
mm-hmm.
Which is very lucky that I've been able to do that. But comedy has paid me well in Austin, and I've paid me well enough, and that's been great and a really, really sweet blessing. But my heart is definitely in fiction, in writing. It's to use, you know, the idea of a vocation, the Catholic concept that you have a calling of what you're meant to be doing. For me, that's writing. That's when I'm writing fiction, when I'm wrestling with those ideas, and when I'm, you know, having a blast trying to write an entertaining chapter. That's when I feel I'm doing what I'm meant to be doing.
That's fantastic. So do you think that there's a common thread that runs through all of your work, you know, including your comedy?
I do, and it's something I've given a little more thought to as this book has come out, especially in the Austin community, because I'm mainly known for comedy, and I think a lot of people were like, well, okay, we'll read your book, but come on. Why didn't you just get on stage and fall down a few times?
Okay.
We like that. But then people were surprised, I think. I think the book surprised them. I think it was better than they had expected, which is nice, better than the opposite. And I think the thread would be a few things. One thing is playfulness and surprise. I'm a big believer in the idea that if you are not being surprised while writing, if you're not discovering something while writing, then your audience won't either. If you're not excited about what you're finding on the page, then your reader will not be excited about finding what they're finding on the page. And I believe the same thing in comedy. In comedy, you know, I've done improv and sketch and stand-up. Some of it you've written before, some of it you're making up on the spot, but always there should be that element of surprise and discovery, where you're like, wow, I wasn't expecting that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a great moment. Mm-hmm. That is a great place, I think, to bring people to. So I love to carry, that's one thing. I would also say, and then the energy of play and surprise as well. I would also say the duty to thrill and entertain. When you are handing someone a short story, and asking them to read it, there are so many beautiful short stories out there. You know, there's the writing of Kafka, there's Flannery O'Connor, there's George Saunders. They could be reading any of those guys. I'm saying I want you, instead of reading one of those, to read me. So I have a duty to really entertain them, to wow them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the same thing on stage. If I'm doing a comedy show and I'm asking someone to sit down for an hour and watch me, then I need to give them something beautiful.
Yes.
Dig deep. Mm-hmm. And really, really thrill them and wow them and make them laugh till their side hurts.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's an important thing. And I get a big rush from that challenge.
You're doing what you're supposed to do, Owen.
Oh, thanks.
So what are you currently working on now?
I've got another book, that's a novel, that should be coming out sometime the next year with an independent publisher. And I'm currently working on my third novel right now, which is about the end of the world.
Mm, sounds interesting.
Yes.
Is that in the same vein as How Best to Avoid Dying?
In a lot of ways, yeah, there's definitely a similar tone. I'm very excited about it. I think it's some of the best stuff. I'm always thinking about this, about whatever I'm working on currently, but I think it's the best stuff I've written yet. It's the end of the world, and there are Jesus clones and aliens and a hermit crab that's a prophet.
Oh, that's great.
So that's great.
Is that a next year release?
Well, we'll see. I've got to finish it first.
Okay. Maybe a year or two down the road.
Yeah.
Great. So how can readers and listeners find out more about you? What's your website?
My website is owenegerton.com, and that's owenegerton.com. And I keep a sort of ongoing blog there.
Mm-hmm.
I also send out something called O Notes about every 3 or 4 weeks, with maybe a piece of fiction or a funny little piece or a link to some of the films I do with dadlabs.com and some other local folks. And you can sign up for that on the website as well.
Oh, great. Great. Well, you know, it has just been great talking with you today. Our time is unfortunately coming to an end. Did you have any final thoughts you wanted to share with listeners today?
Well, I just say a big thanks to all those folks who have been reading the stories and sending me comments. That's been a huge encouragement, and I'm thrilled to know that people still read.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. No kidding. In this day and age, you kind of wonder sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. It's been great talking to you. Best to you.
Thank you.
We wish you much success, and just take care.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Owen. All right, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this interview. I really, really encourage you to check out How Best to Avoid Dying. Owen is an upcoming author. You are definitely going to be hearing more about him in the future, so why not get started now with this book? I know it's available in stores. You can also go to Owen's website, www.owenegerton.com. owenegerton.com. You can also, I believe, order through online bookstores, so please check it out. Also, for a recent book review and online interview, go to readerviews.com. So thanks again for listening. This has been Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. Until next time.